From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard, and joining me this week on the show are Linda Feldman, the White House and Chief Political Correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington, D.C., and here are the issues. Donald Trump, the real estate billionaire, moved closer to winning the Republican presidential nomination, but his rivals and two former Republican nominees unleashed harsh attacks on him. Meanwhile, Hillary Clinton gained ground against Bernie Sanders in the Democratic presidential battle without suffering strong criticism from Sanders or other Democrats. In Great Britain, the June referendum on whether to stay in the European Union has split Prime Minister David Cameron's Conservative Party, and the United Nations imposed tough sanctions against North Korea, this time with the expectation that China will help enforce them. Well, I think March 3rd of 2016, Linda, is going to be a famous day in American politics, if not Republican Party politics, because so much happened on that day that seemed harsh and really self-destructive, I think, for the Republican Party, which we'll all remember had such high hopes about winning the presidency coming in November, and now those hopes seem to be dashed. But anyway, they had a debate that was raucous. Mitt Romney, the former nominee in 2012, harshly attacked Donald Trump, the front runner for the Republican nomination this year, and then John McCain, the nominee in 2008, jumped in, and it was really an incredible day and evening. Where do you think this leaves the presidential race at the moment?
I think this leaves the presidential race a step closer to Donald Trump becoming the Republican nominee. I think Mitt Romney made a terrible mistake in coming out so forcefully against the front runner. It's unprecedented in modern history for the nominee in the last election to come out publicly against the candidate who so far Republican voters are choosing to be their nominee, and then of course John McCain piling on. I think what you're seeing is a huge backlash against the so-called Republican establishment, and I have to say at this point I don't even know if there is an establishment. We talk about this as some great powerful Wizard of Oz that can somehow jump in and fix everything, yeah. But if it exists, it's impotent, and it really plays right into Trump's playbook, which is to be the center of attention. And then to thumb his nose at this so-called establishment, and it only what doesn't kill him makes him stronger, and even the vulgarity of last night's debate, I think, also plays to Trump's advantage. It keeps us all mesmerized by him, and you know, wondering what he'll do next. I mean, it's, you know, I think hard for many of us who've been in Washington for a long time to imagine him as president, but we cannot rule that out.
Michael,
well,
are you going to rule it out?
you can't rule it out. I mean, by the numbers, he's still the leader in terms of delegates that he's earned. He's the leader in the polling in many of the states that are to come. I would say that I agree that Romney made a mistake in coming out with the style that he did yesterday. Yeah. It was very unseemly for him and a touch hypocritical, you know, in certain points where he talks about Donald being a legacy when Romney, in fact, inherited a bunch of money in the governorship, the political legacy of his father. So there was a touch of hypocrisy. It didn't exactly ring true. It wasn't his style. And I think it solidified the Trump supporters in their support of Donald Trump. What I don't necessarily know is that these people are Republicans. I don't think that the people who support Trump are largely Republican. They are Trump supporters in and of themselves. Some Republicans, some disaffected, some independents, and some newbies to the whole political game. You have a bunch of primaries that are coming up that are worth a lot of delegates and they're winner take all and they're closed. So as we get to March 15th, these primaries, you're going to see where the Republicans really stand, you know, on this thing and the question of Donald Trump. But there is no question about the fact that the Republican Party has been possessed. And with Romney coming out as sort of the exorcist, it didn't really ring true. It wasn't that effective.
Yeah, I don't think it exorcised anything. You know, Linda, I think if there is a Republican establishment, Mitt Romney's a part of it, but I agree. And it's so amorphous, it's hard to believe. And if that's the best they can do, and in providing someone to come and criticize Donald Trump. It certainly didn't work. And yet, I wanted to follow up on something Michael said, and that is whether these people are Republicans or not. I vote in Virginia, and you walk in, and they say, what do you want, a Republican ballot or a Democratic ballot? You don't have to say I'm a lifelong Democrat or anything like that. You can vote in either primary. But in states that had just a Republican requirement to vote there, Trump didn't do quite as well, but actually did won states with that requirement, too.
That's right. And going forward, it will be interesting to see, you know, now that the field is smaller, Ben Carson is officially dropping out. So we're already down to four candidates. Mm-hmm. There were only four on stage. So it will be interesting to see if Trump can actually get a majority of votes in these later contests. Of course, he doesn't need to win the nomination. And he can win the Florida and Ohio primaries on March 15th. Are the first contests that are fully winner-take-all. Mm-hmm. Huge number of delegates at stake. And if Trump wins both of those, then it really is over, I think. And
I would agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think there's no question about that. I have never seen a debate, Michael, and I've been watching these things, as Linda probably has too, for many, many years. I've never seen a debate as raucous, as harsh, as bitter, as this, what was this, the eleventh Republican debate. Well,
wow.
I must have missed a few. I've just never seen anything like this. And for, you know, that at times where it seemed like all four candidates were talking at once, the raucous, it may be a mild way of putting it, it can't help Republicans.
I don't think it helps the political discourse in general. And certainly it doesn't help the Republican Party. But again, this process has been hijacked by Donald Trump. It's hijacked by his style, his voters, the people who feel anger, people who feel disgust, people mm-hmm. who feel a certain mm-hmm. sense of outrage. And the entire tone of this, of that debate, mm-hmm. lends into that. And I have to say that I've kind of fault the moderators for the last two debates who either lost control of it completely
or
baited these guys completely into questions that have nothing to do with points that you would debate.
Yeah,
it's
sort of
lobbing gossip questions in and looking for responses. I think it's just the most irresponsible way mm-hmm. to run a so-called debate.
Well, it may be better TV. You know, I find it kind of hard to watch when it just minute after minute they're screaming at each other and making charges and so on. Anyway, we're going to have to take a quick break here. We'll be right back with more Issues in the News.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Welcome back to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes with Linda Feldman and Michael Williams. Linda, well, what about Hillary Clinton? She seems to be just cruising along.
That's right. She is cruising along, especially with the practice in the Democratic Party of having superdelegates who are Democratic leaders, elected people mm-hmm. who automatically get a vote. And mm-hmm. she's amassed the overwhelming majority. In fact, I don't know mm-hmm. of any superdelegate mm-hmm. who has endorsed Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. So
they are the establishment.
That's right. So
in the Democratic
this is
Party.
we're having this sort of opposite of the usual pattern of Republicans being very orderly and falling in line and the Democrats being a bit chaotic, although never to this level of chaos that we have on the Republican side. Hillary Clinton is, she's faced an interesting and pungent opposition from Bernie Sanders. He has a lot of young supporters. So the challenge for Hillary, and we're seeing her reach out, is to attract the Bernie Sanders voter. She cannot, as she runs against him, she cannot alienate his supporters because she will need them to turn out for her in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of the Democratic Party when you compare the Democratic debates with the Republican debates, it's really a night and day. You know, I mean, the Democratic debates are like a quiet prayer session or something compared to this.
Kind of boring.
Yeah, well, they are actually, it touches on what I think Michael was referring to, that maybe the questioners were seeking something that wasn't boring, and the Republican debates were not boring. That's for sure. Michael, do you have anything to add here? The surprising thing was, after the other three candidates, and particularly Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, were attacking Donald Trump so strenuously, then they said, well, they'd vote for him if he's the nominee.
Stunning.
I was a little stunned. Those things don't fit. I mean, I guess party loyalty means something, but...
We'll find out what it means. I mean, it's very easy for them to say that up there on the stage, you know, in the glare of the hot lights. And mm-hmm. I think they were actually quite unprepared to answer that question. That mm-hmm. was one good one that they kind of dropped mm-hmm. in on them, and it caught them off guard. Look, for Hillary, she is sort of turning her gaze towards the general election at this point. She, I would say, pretty much has this thing sewn up. But she is a vulnerable candidate mm-hmm. in the general election. And if you look at the primary she's winning, it's interesting that she's doing very, very well in the red states, the states that she probably is not going to win in the general election.
Yeah, you mean the Republican states,
And the Republican states, yes. Mm-hmm. And the Bernie Sanders is doing much better in the Democratic states, where mm-hmm. she would need to hold serve, if you will. So her number one positive as a candidate is sort of getting that sort of middle, that independent Republican swing voter, if mm-hmm. you will. But I think that the heat of this campaign has dried up that middle. There are only extremes at this point. Mm-hmm. There's extremes on the right. There's extremes on the left. So a candidate like Donald Trump, polling may say that she beats him, but he is a guy who could turn some states that would normally be mm-hmm. sure Democratic wins mm-hmm. or pretty secure swing votes for Hillary mm-hmm. into states that are contested in question.
I have one more question here on the whole Republican fight in the presidential election. You know, there have been a lot of Democrats quoted saying how worried they are about Donald Trump mm-hmm. as the Republican nominee. I don't really believe they're that worried. Do you, Linda?
I think they're laughing, but they shouldn't laugh because... We don't know. I mean, I don't like these general election matchup polls mm-hmm. that purport to tell us what might happen in November, because we're not having that race fully yet. We're not seeing what Donald Trump could do to Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could completely eviscerate her. And the question is, how would she stand up to that? And then, of course, she has her own vulnerabilities with the investigation into her emails.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what we may end up seeing, if it is a Trump versus Clinton general election, is that each party, if there are a lot of voters who are not excited about the nominee, they will be excited about voting against the nominee of the other party. Mm-hmm. So we could have a very negatively motivated turnout scheme.
I totally agree with that. I think that with what this is going to boil down to is, sadly, white versus black. The disaffected white voter versus the supposedly loyal African-American mm-hmm. Voter turnout that Hillary is absolutely relying on, both in the primaries and in the general election. And I predict that this, when you look at the polling from this general election, is going to show some of the most polarized racial voting since Barry Goldwater in 64.
Okay. Let's turn to the polarized situation in Great Britain over the vote, which is something like June 23rd, where they're going to vote whether to stay in the European Union or not. And it's the Conservatives, or at least the leadership of the Conservative Party, David Cameron, the Prime Minister, who has agreed to this referendum. The people wonder now whether he wishes that maybe he hadn't agreed to have this referendum. It seems to be up in the air, although most people I've talked to think that there's a slight edge to staying in the European Union. You know, one of the questions I have is how would this affect the United States? I don't really know, but what about Britain? I mean, they've been in it's since the 70s. 73. And it was actually the Conservative Party that promoted going in, and the Labour Party was against going in, and now the Conservative Party split, and Labour is for staying in the European Union. Anyway, that's confusing, but I'll let you unravel it, Linda.
Well, it's... Yes, that is a confusing scheme, and I too wonder why David Cameron agreed to this. The betting markets are predicting that there is a Brexit, that the UK does leave the mm-hmm. European Union. I mean, who knows where that will be? But I think it would weaken the West as a political and even a military entity, and therefore it weakens the United States. It weakens Britain in terms of trade. It weakens mm-hmm. their ability to have they will no longer have a say, mm-hmm. having exited the EU. On trade agreements, and just in terms of facing off against, say, Vladimir Putin. Putin wants the Brexit. Well, people should think about that. If Putin is for this, maybe people in Britain should rethink what their attitude is about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I talk to people who are for Britain getting out, the people who are British, and what they say is, well, they just want to be like the United States, that the United States would never agree to something where you have some bureaucrats in another country deciding, making decisions for the way you live your life, or they'd like to be like some of their former colonies, like Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and so on, which I think is a pretty good argument.
Well, that'd be news to some of the people who do not support our trade agreements, mm-hmm. Global warming agreements. So, yeah, I think...
Those are not quite as sweeping as sort of the powers that the EU has in Brussels.
Certainly not. I think for a couple of thoughts with the UK, I think it's interesting that they are facing this in the same way that Scotland faced this whole independence vote last year. And it's a sort of a careful what you wish for situation the same way. Let's say that there is a Brexit. Well, what are the options that you go for then? So you join some small little trade organization that exists, and I believe there's something that the European Economic Alliance or something that has such economic powers as Liechtenstein and Iceland currently in them. You can go Switzerland and negotiate every single trade and border agreement that you need to negotiate. Good luck with that. That's going to take a few dozen years, I guess, to sort out. Or you can just do what they're really wanting to do, which is to organize some sort of special agreement where you get a friends with benefits after leaving the European Union. Mm-hmm. Look, everybody wants to have the benefits of being the European Union without all the regulation and all the now the border situation that you have going on with refugees and so forth. Every study shows that the UK is better off in the Union than out. So if cooler heads prevail, they'll stay in.
Well, certainly in the short run they are, but we do see a divided Tory party where you have their most popular person, of course, is Boris Johnson, the mayor of London. He's for getting out, and David Cameron is obviously for staying in. Quite a divide. Anyway, we're going to take another break. We'll be right back with more Issues in the News.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Welcome back. I'm Fred Barnes with Michael Williams and Linda Feldman. Well, let's turn to North Korea and sanctions against North Korea. You know, I think there's sort of a deja vu quality here, Linda, where, this time these sanctions are going to really mean something against North Korea. You know, we're going to fleece all the boats that are coming into North Korea, and we're going to do all these other things, and China's going to help this time, and it's going to be different. I roll my eyes.
Yeah, no, this is, you have to wonder, well, on the one hand, it's nice to see a unanimous vote in the Security Council for something. It's nice to see the world come together around a common cause, even China, including China and Russia. Having said that, I do wonder, you know, we had the news last night that North Korea is now prepping its arsenal for use, which could be a bluff. I mean, the thing we don't know about Kim Jong-un is how rational he is. I mean, you know, if you try to apply game theory to this, I'm not sure that it works. And coming back to the issue of Donald Trump, imagine Donald Trump as president going up against Kim Jong-un. I mean, I can imagine Trump and Putin. They're very similar. But in North Korea, it's such an unpredictable situation that it's a Trump presidency is, my children who are in their 20s are very afraid of a Trump presidency. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it has to do with foreign policy and national security.
You know, Trump brags about his book, The Art of the Deal, and there are these 11 ideas in it that he says, you know, he's a great negotiator. I'm not sure that works with the North Koreans, Michael, his idea of how you negotiate.
Well,
as Linda was suggesting,
it helps to be sitting on the other side of the table from someone who has some sort of rational mindset, some sort of purpose. And the leadership in North Korea forever has shown none of that. I think that's the hard point to argue. Look, these sanctions are tough, and I agree with Linda that it's nice to see this unanimous consent to this from the Security Council. But really, this is all about, to me, the relationship between the United States and China. Mm. China controls North Korea, mm-hmm. part and parcel. Let's be honest about that. And if China agrees to this, I think their play is that now that you've agreed to this, we have to be the ones who negotiate with this. And now it's just another negotiating tool as the United States and China jockey for power and influence in Southeast Asia for the next 20 to 30 years.
Is there anything else that could be done other than these sanctions? I can't think of anything that would be rational at the moment. Can't think of anything.
I can't either. And it's always interesting when you're dealing with a rogue nation like North Korea that you think that everything that could be done has been done, and yet they always manage to come up with another level of sanctions. Mm-hmm. I suppose they have more arrows in the quiver, but at a certain point, I mean, and you don't want the poor people of North Korea who are suffering enough to suffer even more. So we do have to sort of consider the humanitarian aspect of that.
Yeah, well, the leaders in North Korea don't seem to worry much about the humanitarian aspect. And we know, going back to what you were talking about China, Michael, the Chinese obviously want North Korea to exist. They want a buffer between South Korea, which has become incredibly prosperous and is a close ally of the United States, and they'd like that buffer of North Korea between South Korea and China. I've been surprised that up to now, the Chinese have let the North Koreans build this huge, I don't know how huge it is, but it's a nuclear arsenal anyway. And they've given the North Koreans a very long leash, and I hope they're going to shorten it this time, but I'm still not too sure.
Oh, none of us can be too sure about it. And as China continues to militarize, in this area, we've already seen them. And as they have signed this agreement with the Security Council, mm-hmm. one of the first things they said was, well, we're going to do this, and we're going to participate, but we're also a little bit concerned about the U.S. placing THAAD missile systems, these anti-missile defense mm-hmm. systems in South Korea. So the bargaining has begun already. It's very, very clear, as you mm-hmm. said, that North Korea helps China. The existence of mm-hmm. it helps China. So having it under control, I think, is not going to be a problem because they want it. Because they want it to exist.
Mm-hmm. Is there any political difference among American political leaders on North Korea? I haven't noticed one. Nobody else has come out with here's a better idea than sanctions or something. Republicans, there are disagreements on foreign policy for sure, but not about North Korea.
No, I haven't. I'm not aware of any.
No, it seems to be a pretty straight line.
It does. Look, this is a remarkable issue that the North Koreans have seemed to have gotten away with things in violation. It doesn't make any difference who the president is, whether it's Jimmy Carter or Bill Clinton or George W. Bush. And there's always this great optimism, we're going to really step in and do something here, and these sanctions will work, and they don't work. And it doesn't seem to make any difference who's president. I hope the Chinese really are serious about it this time. But what is their real incentive for being serious, Michael, about enforcing the sanctions this time in a way they have not in the past?
For the Chinese. Look, again, to engage in negotiation, it just makes them a bargaining chip. I think mm-hmm. That's the incentive for them. I mean, look, the sanctions, and looking down the list of the sanctions, I think mm-hmm. the ones that are probably going to hurt the North Korean leadership the most are the sanctions on luxury items like Rolexes and high-class cognac. Those are the things that may hurt them the most. But for the Chinese, I think mm-hmm. that they do want to have a large role in the influence of power mm-hmm. in Southeast mm-hmm. Asia, and that means that they have to take a leadership role.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw the list of sanctions, and they sure look tough. And if they are enforced, the North Koreans will certainly
feel
it.
They
will feel it. Well, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Linda Feldman, the White House and Chief Political Correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, and Michael Williams of CBS Radio in Washington, D.C. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers were Jackson Witt and Linus Rimkus. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thanks for listening.